All right, well, good evening, my dear friends. We embark on a wonderful journey together starting tonight. And we do have a few friends that aren't even in the classroom with us, so we're going to be recording for them. And so all of your questions and everything will be added to the tape, so be aware of that. We'll be helping out our other friends who are taking the correspondence. I thought tonight maybe I want to start with a word of prayer, and then I'll spend just a couple moments getting to know each other. I know you know each other pretty well, but we'll spend just a couple moments doing that, and then we'll kind of jump into why are we here, what we're after, and we'll even begin tonight learning the Greek alphabet. So we've got a lot ahead of us, so let's go ahead and pray as we get started. Heavenly Father, it is with great joy and anticipation that we begin our study of the Greek language together. It is a truly rewarding and very rich experience to be able to actually open up the Greek New Testament and read from it. Lord, I thank you for the privilege of the day in which we live in and the vast array of tools that have been provided by other scholars that have gone before us. I pray that we would learn from them as we engage in a very important study, and that is the study of the Greek language, by which we're able to get even closer to the original writing. Lord, thank you so much for this time. We pray your blessings on it. I pray for each of these students that you give them perseverance and help them to stick with this, because there's going to be weeks in which it's tough, and I pray that you just give them that commitment up front and encourage them along the way. I pray that it would be an enjoyable thing to come to class and to learn a little bit more each week, and I pray that you'd help us with understanding. We thank you so much, Lord. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, maybe everybody can get out a sheet of paper. If you don't have one, maybe you can get one from somebody else. Just even a scratch piece of paper is fine. It doesn't have to be that large. But I'd like you to write down your name at the top of that, whatever it is. It could be a half sheet. It could be a quarter sheet. Probably doesn't need to be a note card. You can write down for me your full name, and also give me your address and phone number. I'm going to write that down up here. So name, address. Didn't take long to get rid of the marker. Name, address, give me your phone number. Email address would be fantastic. And that way I've got all of this. I'm going to put in a little sheet for myself so I can get a hold of you if I need to. So name, address, phone number, email address. And then after that, I'd like you to give me a number 1 to 10 on how serious you are about learning this language. 10 being I am blood earnest about it. 1, whatever happens. Okay, give me a number 1 to 10 about how serious you are about, and not just taking this course, but learning the language. How serious are you about learning this language? And then after that, I just want you to write me a brief explanation as to why you're here. Why are you spending this time in this way? Why are you taking a class on Greek? You can be as verbose or as simple as you choose to be. I promise I won't grade you on your answer, at least not this one. After that, give me another 1 to 10. How difficult do you think this is going to be? 1 to 10. How hard do you think learning Greek will be?
15.
set up, I'm going to be passing out the syllabus. I like to, with all of my classes, give everyone a heads up in advance as to what is going to be expected and on what schedule we'll be doing it. This is also helpful as an accountability advice for both of us, and if for some reason you're not here on an evening, you'll know pretty much what happened. By all means, if you know in advance you're not going to be here, then I'd really appreciate an email, and if we need to make up arrangements for which you can either make up a test or a quiz, I'd love that advance notice if you can tell it to me. If something happens right beforehand, then that's fine, and we'll work out something afterward. Do you have those done? Can you guys? Thank you, sir. Okay, good. Nobody wrote it in Greek. Otherwise, I was going to say you should teach the course. Maybe replace me. You guys mind if I just read these reasons? I'm not going to say who wrote them, but I just think this is kind of fun. You might not be able to figure it out, and you might be able to. So
yeah.
Doesn't matter. I'm going to do it anyway. So here we go. I was going to take this mainly because I knew it would be. It would broaden my understanding of the Bible, and now I need credit for my senior year. I wonder who that could be. I want to be as familiar as possible with the Greek language such that I could use my knowledge in the mission field for translation and clarification. I wonder who that could be.
That's me.
Yeah!
Desire to both read and study the scriptures in Greek, at least enough to follow discussion regarding original text interpretations, and be able to introduce the language to my kids who would like to go further in their study than my life currently allows me to. Randy and I are serious about missions to unreached people groups. We want to be equipped for ministry and feel this is so important. I desire to learn the Greek language to help in my personal study and understanding of the original texts for apologetic and teaching purposes to help others better understand the original meaning of the text. I want to see if my student mind still works after all this time in medicine. I want to study something worth my time, not just do Sudoku every day. Just in a glance at the numbers you guys have put, it seems overarchingly that you guys are telling me that you're pretty serious about this. It looks like everyone has a number over 5 at least. And it also similarly seems that most people all think that it's going to be quite difficult. Everyone has very high numbers on that one. What is it that makes you think that Greek is going to be difficult?
It's not a spoken language.
Okay. It's not, it's definitely, you know, sometimes it's considered one of those dead languages, and because especially the Greek that we're going to be learning, Biblical Greek is Koine Greek, and it's definitely not spoken anymore. If you were to go to Greece, the Greek that you would hear spoken there is definitely different than New Testament Greek. There's some similarities, but vocabulary and even some of the grammatical things, as any language does, changes over time. Modern day Greek is different. Just as Koine Greek, by the way, is different than classical Greek as well. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. What else? So it's not a spoken language. What else might make it difficult? Yes, go ahead.
Well, just the guys I've heard about who have taken classes for Greek for multiple years through, you know, even undergraduate work, graduate work, doctoral studies, and even now, you know, we'll admit that they still are learning and continuing to struggle with learning, you know, deeper understanding of the original language. It's just, there's a lot to it. It sounds like it's not something easily mastered.
Sure. Yeah. Excellent, Trino. Yes, the study of Greek is one of those things that's continually ongoing, and you have continued scholarly discussions and debates about the meanings and usages of terms and grammatical constructions. One of the reasons for that makes it particularly interesting and difficult is the time distance, right, between the writing and where we are now. I mean, you still can have some of those issues even with modern day languages where you have a discussion and debate about the proper usage of a term. Like, we might even have a discussion about an English word that way and an English grammatical concept. But surely the further we get away from the language, the more difficult it is. What's another feature of Greek that might make it unique and different and more difficult? Yes, yes, sir.
And just you hear how specific it is, like how many different variables there are in any given word or conjugation.
Yeah, if we were to, and I've talked to some of you about this before, but if we were to plot on a kind of a continuum languages, and we were to specify some that were more of the specific nature and those that were more general, I like to do this because, English would be somewhere in here. Definitely Greek would push towards this end of the spectrum. Very specific language, which is great for clarification as it comes to interpretations and this sort of thing, but also does then, as a result, open up a big discussion. what nuances mean being used here? And so that's also possible. Hebrew is more to this side of the spectrum. It's a little bit more of a general language than even English. The number of tenses is less, only two tenses in Hebrew. English is typically how many? Three. And Greek has several. Yes, go ahead.
I'm just going to ask, where is Aramaic in that continuum?
Yeah, Aramaic is a kind of a Hebraic type of language, so yeah, I'd say somewhere in this area. Aramaic is similar to Hebrew on many levels. And as a result, like if you're reading in the Old Testament, you'll come to some places where there's mixtures of Aramaic and Hebrew. It's almost like a and so as a result, there's some Aramaic words that are being utilized in the Bible.
Where would Latin fall in there, do you think?
Yeah, Latin would be over here. Latin's very much like Greek. As a matter of fact, if you learn Latin or Greek, you'll find a lot of transferability. The cases, although this is somewhat true in all languages. I'll just say, I add this to the difficulty of learning Greek. For a lot of people, it's learning English. a lot of times, and this is one of the wonderful things about learning another language, is people don't always grasp this, but a lot of times it's not until you learn another language that you finally learn your own. And you'll find with me that that's sometimes one of the bigger hurdles that people have is learning the English grammar. If you already have a good handle on that, then you're light years ahead of a lot of seminary entering Greek students. Okay, so that's another issue to play here. But yes, Latin, very similar to Greek. Latin has a lot of its, Latin, which has, huge prominence in the English language, understand a lot of its roots come from the Greek language. Remember, Greek culture and Hellenization is big over the ancient world, and you even see the way in which Rome takes so much of Greek culture and just makes it Roman. I mean, it's just pretty much stealing Greek culture and renaming it, right? This is probably no more clearly seen than in the Greek pantheon, which is brought over to Rome with just different names, right? So Zeus becomes
Jupiter.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and Hermes becomes Mercury, right? Yeah, so there is. So we see, in our planets normally are something of this nature, like Athena becomes Venus, right? So the gods are stolen from Greece over to Rome, and even a lot of the Roman historians kind of pick up on Greek mythology and try to Romanize it. And so that's kind of how Rome did its thing. And it's one of the reasons why Christianity, at least until the persecutions really developed, Christianity was able to somewhat thrive within the Roman Empire, because they were somewhat open to some amount of cultural mixtures, especially as long as Christianity was considered a sect of Judaism. The Jews were allowed to worship as they had been. The Romans had decided to allow that to occur. And so as long as Christianity was kind of considered by Rome to be some sect of Judaism, it was kind of left alone. As soon as those divisions became more and more pronounced, persecutions developed against Christians from both Jews and Romans. So anyway, but these are all some reasons for sure. Anything else anyone want to add that makes maybe Greek a hard thing? Yes. Yeah, thank you. I was waiting for somebody to say that. Yeah, with like Latin, for example, you start with the alphabet that you're used to. Now, you might have a little pronunciation discussion. We have to learn how they would pronounce these letters. But the letters are the same. The alphabet's there. In Greek, yes, you're learning a whole new alphabet. And whenever you come to a language that does that, you're definitely, it seems to up the ante. There's good and bad. The difficult or bad is that you have to learn this new alphabet. The good is that you don't have a lot of other pre-understandings. So when you see these symbols, you're going to learn, as long as you do it right from the get-go, you're going to learn what those letters are right from the start. And you'll associate those in your mind from then on. So there's pros and cons to that. But it'll become very normal to you and not very long. Okay, yes, Randy.
I was just going to say kind of along the same vein as Trito. It just seems like whenever you see somebody with the Greek New Testament, if they're actually doing any translation or like, you know, intending to comprehend what it's saying, they also have like 27 other books with them. So it just seems like a very intimidating language to be able to do anything with. And so as far as like comprehending the material and maybe being able to look at a more simple passage and kind of take out the meaning of the passage and maybe a couple words don't know but use context clues, that seems a little bit less difficult. But as far as being able to use the Greek language with the Greek New Testament and nothing else, it seems like a almost unsurmountable task.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, Randy. And I would say this, is that there is definitely a distinguishing feature between being able to sit down and just read the Greek New Testament versus getting to the nuanced meaning and all the grammatical concepts that are playing there. And both of those are going to be working together. I mean, it's only so useful as you're able to actually put this together and achieve meaning out of it. But I will say that, you know, some of those 18,000 books that are stacked on either side can sometimes be because they're really researching some particular nuance, which, wonderfully, this is one of the great things about this, is you'll actually be able to engage in that discussion. There are resources that are done today of a very high scholarly level that a lot of times they won't necessarily even give you definitions of Greek terms. Like, there's Greek commentaries and Greek lexicons where you can look up a particular Greek word and find that in its occurrences in the New Testament. And what's wonderful about a course like this is that you can actually sound out the word and then you can engage in the discussion. Whereas otherwise, those kinds of resources are really kind of outside of your reach until you at least have a little grasp of the alphabet, a little bit of understanding that way. So, yes, absolutely right. Well, let me go through the syllabus quickly with you all. You'll see here that we're going to receive an introduction to the Greek language in preparation for exegesis in the New Testament. This course is strictly a study of Koine Greek, which is the Greek used in the New Testament. Koine just meaning common. By the way, we camp out a lot on that in and of itself. One of the wonderful things about the scriptures is that they were inspired in the common language. It wasn't a highfalutin, legalistic, nobody understands it language. It was in the common tongue. And I think that says a lot even about modern translation efforts today. That the Lord, in His providence, I mean, think about this. God could have sent His Son Jesus at any time in history. But He sends Him in a tremendous time of, you know, the Roman Empire was somewhat by an iron fist, but there was the Pax Romana, right? These years of peace. And the Roman roads, and a common language, such that when Jesus tells the disciples, you know, that you're going to be my witnesses both here in Jerusalem and Judea and to Samaria and the other uttermost parts of the world, that there really was a sense. By the way, if you read Acts, it really does that, doesn't it? There's a progression where they go from Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the book of Acts ends with Paul going where? To Rome, right? The center of the empire at that time. And huge place of export of ideas. And so you can see this wonderful thing in the providence of God that He would have the New Testament written and inspired by the Holy Spirit in a time when the common language was widespread. And so I think this, again, is just a really neat thing just historically to note. And I think it at least has some statements that could be made by implication that might defend modern translation efforts today of translating the Bible into the common language of people wherever they are. And I think would definitely stand against practices that are done like in the Catholic Church when masses are done in Latin and nobody understands it. Again, I think that's an interesting point in and of itself. Here's the learning objectives. And by the way, we're just going to be handling the first 14 chapters of this book this semester. The plan is by the end of the year, by this time next year, we'll have finished Mounce's book. Okay, so we'll have this semester, then we'll have a month or so off, December into January, We'll pick up at the end of January and go through about the end of the school year, and then we'll take another little break, and then over the summer, a few more weeks, and we can finish off the course. The plan is to get through the whole book over that time. But we're only going to center in on nouns, okay? There are some Greek textbooks that will take you noun, verb, noun, verb, noun, verb. The advantage to that is that you're able to actually put together little Greek sentences. The disadvantage, and by the way, that's how I learned the language. I learned it not through mouths. My Greek textbook was about a quarter of the size and very difficult to read and bad formatting, horrible printing. I had a horrible experience as it related to the textbook. When I found Mounce's book, I was like, why didn't we use this book when I was at seminary? There are some differences in the Greek that I learned, and I'll talk a little bit about that when we get to those points. One of those differences is that the way I learned it was little nouns, a little bit of verbs, a little bit of nouns, a little bit of verbs, going back and forth. The good news about it, yeah, you can get right into particular passages. Like, you pick select very small verses, and, oh, there, we know all the vocab in that verse, and we can actually translate it. That's a nice little thing. The problem is, at least for a mind like mine, I'm a little bit more of an engineering mind, and as a result, I like categories, and I like to be able to put these things in these little, you know, little notebook categories kind of thing in my head. And that's the wonderful thing about nouns, is we're going to be nouns. And we're going to still do translations of some example passages, but whenever it comes to a verb, he'll just give it to you. He'll give you the verb, and you're going to be working on nouns this semester, okay? So it kind of keeps everything compartmentalized. The verb situation is a much broader one. There's going to be many more chapters dealing with verbs, but we'll be able to handle the noun side of the equation this semester. Learning objectives. Students who successfully complete this course should, number one, understand the importance of original languages for all Bible study ministry. I really do hope that comes across. I think on some level you see the importance in order to engage in this at all with me. So maybe I'm preaching to the choir a little bit, but I'm hoping to make you guys spokesmen for this, and maybe we can encourage some others to take part in it as well. Two, learn morphological patterns and grammatical structures of the Greek New Testament. Number three, obtain a basic vocabulary of the most frequently occurring words in the Greek New Testament. This is one of the nice things about Mounce's book also. He in other languages, you know, it's kind of like, you know, where do we start with vocabulary? And you go, well, we'll start with, you know, normal conversational things that would happen. Well, we're not going to be using Greek conversational. I'm just going to be straight up with you. I mean, you can speak some of it to one another, but it's not really, at least for myself, and I think you probably agree with me, the reason you're here is to be able to read the New Testament. That's why you're here. You want to be able to read the language and understand what's being said there. So we're not as concerned with common niceties and salutations and, you know, all of those things. As a matter of fact, what Mounce does is he goes, you know, if you're going to be putting words into your head, let's make them be words that happen a lot in the New Testament. And so what he does in his book is, by the time you're done with the book, when you get through the whole thing, a year from now, if you've learned every single vocabulary word that is mentioned throughout those chapters, you'll know 80% of the words used in the Greek New Testament. That means 4 out of 5. The 4 out of 5 words you come across, you should be able to know and translate. So, 80% of word occurrences, excuse me, let me clarify that, 80% of word occurrences. So, 80% of the words that occur, you will be able to translate from your own mind. There are, as we've talked about before, in sermons and stuff, apoxigomena, meaning what?
Words only occur once.
Okay, good. Words that only happen once, only occur once, spoken once. And so there are a whole slew of those. But the idea is that when you come across a word like that, I'll show you a tool in just a minute that can help you. You just look up that word. The point is, if you were to memorize every single word, and by the way, he has these word counts, and so you can, we'll look at them together. Know exactly how many words there are to learn, and you'll see how many you'll actually learn in the course, but the vast majority of these words being used a lot throughout the New Testament. So I appreciate his approach to vocabulary. Okay, so you're not going to be learning a bunch of obscure words that happen only once in some book somewhere. You'll be learning the words that are typically utilized. So, be able to translate simple Greek sentences and become aware of the major grammatical and lexical tools for New Testament study, which is a good time for me to talk about those. Quickly, I've got the the books that you're going to be receiving, which I just haven't gotten still yet. They'll be here on Wednesday. I can give them to you Wednesday night if you're here. This is the Basics of Biblical Greek Workbook that you're all receiving. Fantastic. Just filled with exercises throughout. There's in every section there are charts in which you get to do some parsing, and we'll talk about all of that. And then there's also little example exercises as well as translations. And so it'll be a lot of good stuff for us to work through. And then the book that you're getting, this is actually the first edition. He's now at the second edition. And so I'm going to go ahead and get the second edition, so my page numbers are the same as your guys' too. Sad, this is when I have all marked up. But anyway, we'll all be working through the second edition. We'll get the thinner book, which is kind of nice. It's kind of nice to hold anyway. But we'll be working through this book together, and so it'll be great. And you guys have ordered those or already have them. So you need to have those two books. Those are the required books for the course, okay? Now I just want to list a couple other things that might be recommended for your library. The first of which, if you're going to buy something else besides those two books, you got to buy the Greek New Testament. And I've listed the ISBN numbers here, and I have there in bold with dictionary. You can buy this without the dictionary. Why would you do that? Buy it with the dictionary. In the back, it has the Greek word, you know, most of, if not all. I don't know if it's completely. I think it might have them all. It has real quick definitions, just one word definitions. But it's helpful just on the binder. You're like, oh, what does that word mean? Just flip to the back. And there you've got a really good brief to Koine Greek to English dictionary. So make sure you get one of these. You'll see there that this is the UBS version, UBS 4, the fourth edition. And the other way that sometimes you can find them is what's called the Nestle Aland, the NA27, I think is the edition on that. I think they have grouped them even together possibly now, if I remember correctly. So anyway, if you look on this USBN, you'll get the same one as me. For the longest time, the real only difference between the NA and the UBS was the Greek apparatus, which we'll talk about. Well, let me talk about right now real quick. Some of you have been in my Sunday school class, we'll talk about it. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. But whenever they come to a particular verse where there's some word in there that's under discussion, scholarly debate as to what word should be there because of manuscript evidences, if there's some particular word that's under scrutiny, they will highlight that in the footnotes, and then they'll put usually a score next to it. It'll be A, B, C, or D. A being, we virtually certain that this is the right one. D being, where it is, you know, we had to pick one. So there's the one that we selected, okay? So, and then they'll give what's really a neat thing, and I didn't put this on here. I was like, why didn't I put this on there, too? If you get interested in that sort of discussion, you're like, well, that's not enough for me, because this is just going to tell you which manuscripts it happened in and stuff. And I'll show you about this later on. There is a companion to it, written by Bruce Metzger. This is going to cost you. So if you might just want to borrow it from me, unless you want to make an investment. That's fine, but this little book is pretty expensive. But it's a textual commentary in the Greek New Testament. And what he does is you can look up those same exact places, and he'll give you an explanation. You know, it's like, the absence of pontes, which is a word that Luke is fond of using, from several witnesses, is not an accident, maybe the decision of scribes were unhappy with the hyperbole. So he's giving a discussion is what happened in that roundtable discussion when they were deciding which word to put there or not. So kind of a neat running textual commentary. I mean, this is really truly a textual commentary. Not a commentary in the typical sense where it's explaining the meaning of the text. It's a textual commentary. It's a commentary of why we decided this word or another one. So anyway, that's another thing. This is the textual commentary on the Greek New Testament. This is the second edition. I think that's still the newest one. And it's Bruce Metzger. His last name is Metzger. If you do anything in language studies, especially in Greek, this guy's name is going to come up. Bruce Metzger, considered one of the foremost scholars on the Greek language. And so anyway, Bruce Metzger. Let's see, what else did I put down here? Oh, yeah. Kubo. This is a reader's Greek English lexicon. And this is kind of a cool thing. Randy, this would go right along with the question you had just a little bit ago. What this is let's say that we were reading through the book of Galatians. What will happen is any word that happens very rarely, this will happen. So you can seriously be sitting there with, if you come to a first year of Greek and you're sitting with your Greek New Testament open, you can have this alongside of it. And so as you're reading, you can look over to here just to pick up the words that are rare, that you probably haven't memorized. And that's why I call a reader's Greek English lexicon, because any word that happens a lot, they're not going to happen here. It's only going to be the words that typically you might not know because they're of a rare, more rare variety. And if the word has already happened in that immediate context, they won't give it again. They say, okay, you just picked it up from the previous verse. Now you need to go with that understanding. Okay, so but it's really a neat tool because if you want to have that feel of like I'm just reading the Greek New Testament, and it doesn't become so crutchy, like it's like every single word I'm just like looking at the translation over there, like if you had your NAS open or something. This is kind of a neat little way of doing that. So I've got that written down there. The other one is this one by Han, Kia or Han. This is a Parsian guide to the New Testament. This is like one of those things which I almost don't want to mention now. Because if you have it, it might become very crutchy. It's very easy to then just look up any verse you want, and it has all of the verbs that occur, and it will just tell you exactly what kind of verb is going on throughout all of the New Testament. So you look up any verse and it just tells you right up there, second aorist, active, participle, nominative, singular, masculine. So it'll tell you that with each one of these words. So anyway, it's a kind of a really cool tool, but very easy to become very crutchy with it. So just be aware of that. Lamerson has this little book that I actually just heard about this from Justin, and I went and purchased it just to check it out. And I read the first few chapters, and it's pretty good. The idea of this book was to serve as a companion next to Mounces. And you can buy it if you want to, but I'm going to use a couple of things from here, so I'm going to give you kind of the tidbits that he wants to mention anyway. But really all this is just to help you with the English if you're struggling with the English part of Greek grammar. Okay, but I'll probably be incorporating a couple things, and I'll give you an example of it even here tonight. And then a couple other tools that Mounce has in connection with his stuff. If you just don't really like having to write out your own vocabulary cards, or you just don't like your own writing, can't read your own writing, like me, this is kind of a cool thing. He's got all of the vocabulary cards that you'll use during the entire year. So you buy this once. I think it's like $11 or something like that. You might consider it worth the investment. But it'll have the card number, so which number, the number corresponds with the numbered word in his book. And then it'll have the word and its endings, and then the article, which we'll talk about, very important in Greek. And on the back side, the definition. So anyway, kind of a cool set. I haven't obviously even opened it all the way yet. I haven't used it all myself, but I think that... it's a pretty neat thing. So I just want to make you aware of that. As well as there's one other thing I wrote down here, this Biblical Greek laminated sheet. There is a kind of a cheat sheet of sorts that Mounce made up and laminated. And I think you can buy it for like $6 or $7. And it just has a huge amount of information from this book all over it. I think it's a two-sided thing. And it's got like a quick sheet. Now, what I'm going to tell you is, if you'd rather just do the work yourself, you're welcome to. You don't have to buy these things. You can make your own note cards, and you can... And there's something even maybe beneficial about writing out those words and making your own note cards. That's how I did it when I went through the course. So you can definitely make your own note cards. But I really do encourage you, make note cards. Can I say it again? Make note cards. Make note cards or buy them and use them. Most important thing is to use them after you've made them. Okay. Quick course meeting specifics will be here on Monday, 6 to 8, from the 30th year today of August till December 14th. We'll be in this room every time. Class attendance, you need to be here, okay? You're expected to be here. I know that I am doing correspondence, and by all means you can do that if you need to, if some, something happens and you need to take it that way instead. But I really do think that if at all possible, and this goes for those who are listening to the recording right now, if at all possible, you can be here on any night, I think you'll benefit from being here. So if you can make it, be here for the classroom. Reading and workbook completion. I've got a syllabus we'll look at in a moment. You need to make sure you do the reading. You'll need to read it over and over and over, okay? and then you'll need to complete the homework assignments. It's the only real way to know if you're learning it. And I will be grading those, okay? We will take a quiz just about every week. You'll either have a quiz or a test. I have found that it is the best thing to have those ongoing accountability devices. If it was only we took three tests the whole semester, I know if you're anything like me, you'll be up the night before working on a thing. So at least what I guarantee is you're up at least one night every week leading up to the test because you'll be preparing for that quiz. The quiz will have both a vocabulary section as well as grammatical section. Okay, so you'll learn a little bit of grammar, a little bit of vocabulary, and I will have a quiz or a test every week. There will be three exams that are going to be given. I'm not going to have a final. I have you there down there, three exams and a final, but there won't be a final. So those take three exams. Each exam will be over it's the section chapters right before it. You know, you had that question, does that mean that I don't have to know anything after I take the first? Well, you're always going to need to know the alphabet. And you're always going to, everything builds on itself, right? So it's like math, you can't just forget addition because now you're in calculus, right? So similarly here. Let's see here. Disclaimer. Course grade. Attendance. I do encourage participation in class. I do like to have a good discussion. So by all means, raise your hand. Stop me whenever you need to. We might, in general, plan to take like a 5-minute break. Since we're going 2 hours, you don't have to all sit here for 2 hours straight, so probably at around 7 o'clock in general, we'll take a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back. Okay, so we'll do that in a little bit here. Workbook completion, you need to complete that. I will check and grade those, and as I talked about the exams and quizzes already. Okay, go to the last page, page 4, and you'll see our course schedule. Tonight, I'm giving you an introduction to Biblical Greek. We're going to be covering chapters 1, 2, and 3. That sounds like a lot, but those couple first chapters are very short. So it's really just chapter 3 that we're going to be really centering in on tonight. Next week, we'll come in and talk about punctuation and syllabification. And I think it's around there when we start to pick up on some vocabulary. And then we'll take our test number 1 a couple weeks from tonight. Okay? We only have a few weeks together, so I have to get in these tests. And it just makes a good break right there. So that first test will be over mainly like alphabet and how do you break up a word in order to pronounce it right. That's what syllabification is, right? So anyway, we'll work on that for the first test. And because of the nature of the course, you know, I'd love to just give you a test and just let you go home, but you're going to have to stick around. And so we'll take test first hour, and the second hour we're going to lecture on the next chapter because I just can't let you take a break over a week. You need to keep it rolling, okay? We'll look at these different cases then. Mounts teaches a 5-case system. This is another difference from the Greek that I learned. I learned an 8-case system when I was in seminary. And I'll talk about that later on when we get there. But we'll learn 5 cases. I, by the way, agree with Mounts in this case. He breaks them up on form. There's 5 cases by form. There are 8 cases by function. And I like his division better because from your standpoint, I can remember sitting where you are, when you're looking at the exact same like letters, and now you have to decide which case it is because you don't know which one it is because there's a couple other cases it could be, it's just a frustrating thing. I mean, why make that the distinction? We will, if you come for a second year of Greek, then we'll talk about all those little distinctions. But I think it's very helpful to have the cases be based on form of the Greek word. In other words, each case has a different, there's some overlap, but you'll be able to tell from context. But the endings are different, and so we'll be able to look at those together. Nominative, accusative, and then genitive and dative. There's also the vocative case, which we'll talk about. Prepositions and adjectives. We'll take test number 2 on the 16th of November. And we'll start 30 question nouns, which are a little bit more difficult. And then first and second person personal pronouns, demonstrative pronouns and adjectives, and then we'll look at relative pronouns until our last test on the 14th of December, in which we'll stop for the Christmas break and probably through a few weeks in January also. We'll start back up again after that. Okay. Before we take a break, I want to just mention a couple of reasons that have been given by others as to why they wanted to learn Biblical Greek. To know the Word of God better. To be a resource for answering difficult questions that come up in small group Bible study. To to understand what your pastor is talking about when he talks about the Greek this or that. It's fun, especially if you like puzzles or riddles. Knowing why Jehovah's Witnesses are wrong about John 1:1, when they say Jesus is a little God, little g God. See through bad arguments based on the etymology of Greek words. Understanding commentaries, especially as I mentioned before, those are a Greek basis. Understanding variant texts, they're talking about the textual apparatus and that stuff. To increase my English vocabulary, this is sometimes a reason that's given in support of Latin, especially those words that are like, you know, over two syllables. 50% or so of the English language has Latin roots. Greek counts for about 25%. So if you know Latin and Greek, you have about 75% of the roots for English words. It's one of the reasons why, you know, the spelling bee champions and stuff learn roots of words, because they can tell then from that relative spellings also. And it's amazing how many English words all of a sudden just come out the page and you're like, ah, that's a Greek term. You know, you'd be able to be like, what is it, my Big Fat Greek Wedding? Give me any word, I'll give you the, you know, the Greek. But yeah, see, you guys probably do it better than me. There you go. Kimono, right, that's right. What was the explanation on that one, Jessica, do you remember?
Something about winter and what do you wear in the winter?
A kimono.
Yes, something
of that nature. There you go. Very good. Okay. Sometimes people have objected that they just don't have time for such a study. But I would just challenge everyone on that. Yeah, this is always one of those things. We're always working with priorities, aren't we? But sometimes, and maybe not in your guys' cases, but sometimes I can just point to like TV and we've already found the time that we needed. So anyway, it's just a matter of how we're going to spend our time that way. So I will say this, some will say, well, isn't the English good enough? Well, it all depends on what you're after. My purpose in teaching this course is not to denigrate the English language. We really do have tremendous and fantastic translations. If nothing else, you'll find in this course why I like the NASB so much. You'll see it real quick. Because of its very literal word-for-word translation ability, its method, you'll maybe come to even more deep appreciation for the New American Standard Bible, which I think has done an excellent job with that. And some others have objected, well, I'm already not spending enough time in the Bible. Maybe I should just spend some time in the English Bible before I try to tackle learning Greek. But I would just respond to that by saying, I think that learning Greek can be a great motivator to reading the Bible. As a matter of fact, it ought to be. It ought to be what your motivation is for being here. And I think that it's one of those wonderful things where when you're able to look at the original languages, I think it just spurs us on in our study of the Bible anyway. So let me also pass out one other thing here. A little chart that I made for all of you, which I thought might encourage studiousness, or it will just be a neglected chart. But the idea is to try to encourage a little bit of time every day. I promise you, and I speak from woeful not following this, and even as my Spanish career shows itself, huh, Jessica? So, do as I say, not as I do, I guess is my thing here. I know it's sometimes tough, and I know sometimes it's just the nature of how things go, where you gotta just, you know, binge on Greek for a night or something in order to get it all back into your head. But I'll tell you, as far as it being useful long-term and memorable every day a little bit, it'd be much better to spend 30 minutes a day, every day, than to spend 3 or 4 hours the night before. It's just the nature of it. The more and more the repetition, it becomes more and more part of it. That's the reason why people who are immersed in cultures really do learn it. It forces it. It's an ongoing thing. It's not just like a one time, oh yeah, here I am, and now I go out and I don't even think about it again. So really want to encourage you. I don't know how much stronger I can stress it. Find a way in which you can carve out that time. Find a time in the day where, you know, the kids are sleeping, or, you know, it's a lunch break, and whatever, but find find some time where you have this somewhat consistent way of taking a look at this just a little bit every day. And maybe get to use each other, make each other accountable to one another, maybe even. Maybe even get together. I think it's a wonderful thing. By all means, if you can get together with somebody else and talk Greek and look at it together, it's a great encouragement. So do that as well. Let me, before we take a break, let me just make a few statements about the Greek language. I want to pass out the sheet that I've made. This is just a photocopy from chapter 1 of Mouse's book, since you don't have it. I told you that the first two chapters are very short. This is chapter 1. Let's just read this together, and I know that you can read just as I can. So somebody want to read the first paragraph for us? Anyone? Okay, Randy, you're first. Trina, you get the second paragraph, all right?
The Greek language has a long and rich history stretching all the way from the 13th century BC to the present. The earliest form of the language is called Linear B, 13th century BC. The form of Greek used by writers from Homer, 8th century BC, through Plato, 4th century, is called Classical Greek. It was a marvelous form of the language capable of exact expression and subtle nuances. Its alphabet was derived from the Phoenicians, as was Hebrew's. Classical Greek existed in three major families of dialects: Doric, Aeolic, and Ionic.
Very good.
Of which Attic was a branch.
Very good. Good, Trina.
Athens was conquered in the 4th century BC by King Philip of Macedonia. Alexander the Great, Philip's son, who was tutored by the Greek philosopher Aristotle, set out to conquer the world and spread Greek culture and language. Because Alexander spoke Attic Greek, it was a dialect that was spread. Was also the dialect spoken by the famous Athenian writers. This was the beginning of the Hellenistic Age.
Yes, why not pick up the third paragraph for me?
As the Greek language spread across the world and other languages, it was altered, which is true of any language. The dialects also interacted with each other. Eventually, this adaptation resulted in what today we call Koine Greek. Koine Greek means common and describes the common everyday form of the language used by everyday people. It was not considered a polished literary form of the language, and in fact, some writers of this era purposefully imitated the older style of Greek, which is like someone today writing King James English. Koine was a simplified form of classical Greek, and unfortunately, many of the subtleties of classical Greek were lost. For example, in classical Greek, help me, Jeff.
Yeah, allos, I'm sorry.
And other of the same kind, while
heteros.
And other of a different kind. If you had an apple and you asked for
an allos,
you would receive another apple. But if you asked for
heteros,
you would be given perhaps an orange. Some of these subtleties come through in scripture, but not often. It is this common Koine Greek that is used in the Septuagint, the New Testament, and the writings of the Apostolic Fathers.
Jessica, I saw your hand up. Why did you move that to me?
For a long time, Koine Greek confused many scholars. It was significantly different from classical Greek. Some hypothesized that it was a combination of Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic. Others attempted to explain it as a Holy Ghost language, meaning that God created a special language just for the Bible. The discoveries of Egyptian papyri in the last 100 years have shown that this language was the language of everyday people used in writings of wills, private letters, receipts, shopping lists, etc.
By the way, it's those archaeological discoveries that have helped with meanings terms as well. Especially when you get to those hypoxagomena, right, where they don't happen anywhere else, and we're struggling with what the meaning of the term is, you don't have other examples of it in the New Testament. That's when those kinds of discoveries archaeologically become helpful. Remember, always the trump card of all meaning of any word is always immediate context. Context always drives meaning, okay? So it's this word in connection with the other words that always is driving our understanding of a particular word. But in cases where there's some range of meaning that could be attributed to a word, that's where we look, first of all, to other uses of the biblical term in the Bible, and then after that we would look to outside sources to see how those things are used in secular culture. Okay, so you kind of get a little bit of a flavor for the Greek that we're going to be looking at. It, as all languages do, they has changed over time, and so this is the particular version that we'll be looking at together. And it is... while it's kind of interesting that they're concerned about the losses that it made from the classical, it definitely is a very much more specific language than English. So there's a lot of subtleties still inherent to the language And there's lots of discussions, such as the one that Mounts gives here. By the way, we'll note this together. Mounts gives some little devotional thoughts and some discussion of interpretations. And just understand that he is a scholar like anyone else, and his own discussions can be debated and discussed, okay? So just be aware of that as we go forward together. All right, well, let's take a break. Let's take like a 5-minute break. If anybody needs to go to the restroom or anything, you can do that, and then we'll reconvene in like 5 minutes, okay?